Hello, my finest friends. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Here's a joke from my son. What did the bum say to the other bum? That's a bummer. You know, not for everyone. Look, thanks to everyone who's come to see the previews of Can I Have My Ball Back? It's been going really, really well, and I'm really pleased with how the show's turning out. It's officially on tour now from Wednesday. I'll be at the Leicester Square Theatre. A couple of tickets left. Lots of press coming to that one. It'd be lovely to sell out, but there are a few other London gigs not selling as well. So if you're going to come to London, maybe look up those other London gigs. And then this week I'll be in St Albans on Thursday, Gloucester on Friday, Chorley on Saturday, which is sold out, but you can join the waiting list, and Glasgow on Sunday. Two shows. I think the earlier show is sold out. Check with the venue, but the later show has some availability. Come along if you can. If you enjoy these podcasts and like them being free, then the great way to pay me back is to buy a ticket to a show or buy a download or a book from gofasterstripe.com. But you can just keep listening for free as well. That pays me back also. So, you know, no pressure. But I'd love to see you there. If you just know me from the podcast and don't know me as a stand-up, I'm pretty good as a stand-up. It's a good show. I think you're going to enjoy it. It's only made about seven men faint so far. So, you know, are you brave enough to take the challenge? Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy whichever podcast you're listening to now.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the ballroom at the Assembly Rooms. Please welcome a man who has spawned the enemy. It's Richard Herring. Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. Oh, hello. Oh, how lovely to see you all. Thank you for coming out on a... Is it Tuesday afternoon? Is it Tuesday? I don't know what day. I don't know where I am or what's happening already. I'm only doing a short run and I'm already bamboozled and feeling the weight of the past crushing me down. I'm having a great time. Welcome to Richard Herring's Legally Searching Trump podcast. Yeah, if you're listening at home, it was a couple of weeks ago. Hi. You'll know what's happening. Is he in prison yet? But I was talking to the FBI, and according to documents in Trump's safe, he was trying to stop everyone calling it Rehlerstabus. So I don't know if that's what he was doing. That's what he was up to all that time. Welcome to the show. I'm sort of slightly bamboozled by Edinburgh. The first podcast of the Edinburgh one went out yesterday, and it feels like I recorded that 3 months ago. And it was 5 days ago that I recorded it. So that's insane. And it just, even though I'm only doing 12 days, I've still got the thing where there's always 6 shows to go, wherever we're at. There's only 5 now, and it's still... Still feels like so. However long you do, you can't escape the time machine of Edinburgh. We went to see another show yesterday. I'm going to go mainly to kids' shows. We went to see Comedy for Kids, which if you've got kids, or if you haven't, it might be a bit weird to go. But go anyway. It was really good fun. What I found interesting about it, it's just a stand-up show for kids, so it's got no one saying fuck in it, hopefully. That's why I haven't done it, because I'm not sure I can do that. And I was sort of
slightly worried about my kids swearing, because they do, because of me. I'm a terrible father. Why am I admitting this? It was sort of interesting that even though I didn't say to my kids, and I'm sure no one else did, that this is different than another gig, that they instinctively knew that they were supposed to shout stuff out at the acts. It was kind of, and all the kids did it, but my son particularly did it. There was a puppet called Randy Feltface, I think it's called. Brilliant. It's a brilliant puppet, and the guy did really well with it. But my son just kept on shouting, "You're a dummy head! You're a dummy head!" until he had to go, "What are you saying?" And then, because he was under a table, he couldn't really hear for ages. So my son was just shouting, "You're a dummy head!" He was correct. It was a dummy's head on this. He finally got it. And then all the kids started calling the puppet dummy head. And it was, you know, I realised, you know, my son, he's the enemy. I'm a comedian. He's a heckler. That is, I've created, it's like Darth Vader and, isn't it? It's all the Sith. I've created. I sent my kids actually offered to leaflet for me yesterday, and they went out leafleting. And my daughter came home. She was very came back to the flat and said she was very proud. Said I gave out 9 leaflets. And my wife, yeah, better than my current lot. Am I? No, they're very good. I'm joking. They're extremely good. Ernie gave out 5. Is anyone in? There was a video of them giving them to 2 Chinese tourists, which I think it's good that they don't discriminate and don't they treat everyone equal. But that isn't really my audience. I don't think. Did anyone come because a child about this high gave them a leaflet yesterday? Fuckers. Useless fuckers. But it's good. It's they haven't realised they could get paid for that yet. I mean, admittedly. Not much. Ask my current leafleters about that. All right, look, we're going to crack straight on. We've got a fantastic guest, a record-equalling 7th appearance on this podcast for this guest. Though he actually did host this podcast on one occasion when I was the guest. So I don't think that probably means it's sort of better than you know, he's not better than Adam Buxton. No one thinks that. No one thinks that. You'll take that to heart. He's probably best known for his portrayal of Jove in Funny Valentines. That's why we're here today. Will you please welcome the amazing John Robbins, ladies and gentlemen. Here he is, John Robbins.
Hello, everyone.
7th time. You should get like a little blazer or something, shouldn't you, for the 7th?
I should get a blazer. You've also now run out of all my credits. There's no more. If I came on again, you'd have to just say, "He's just him. That's who
he
is."
You'll do something rubbish between now and next year. That was a rare acting job for you, Jove. You've done. In fact, you've only got 2 acting credits, and one of them is Drunk History, which I don't think can count.
That's not acting. I was not acting on Drunk History. I was very drunk. Yeah, I don't get asked to ever audition for anything.
No. I think you sort of have to really chase it if you want to be an actor. I sort of sit back and go, well, I'll wait for the offers to come to me. And about twice in lockdown, I got offered 2 things over Instagram, which turned out to be films. But that's the first time that it's... I don't know, if you're on Instagram, that might be the way they do it.
Yeah, I think someone said to me quite a few years ago, you are what you do.
Yeah.
Which is quite a bleak thought when you tot up what it is that you spend your day doing.
Yeah.
But you can't sort of expect to be asked to be in a, you know, a film if you're not trying to be in a film.
I think you have to try. There's a lot of people who want to be in films.
Exactly, yeah. So no, it's not a stress.
No.
No.
Good. All right. Was it a good part, Jove, in front? Was it a good...
It was a short that Sarah Pascoe made for Valentine's Day.
Oh, I'm sorry, John. I didn't look at the... sorry to bring it up.
And
we'll move on to the next failed relationship very soon.
Oh, man. Yeah, so that's not an emotional memory. But okay. It was a nice little fun little thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all your girlfriend can give you parts. That's the other way to get into acting jobs. That's a good way to do it. You had your headphones stolen on the way to the gig, but I noticed you still had your headphones when you arrived at the gig.
Well, those are my other set of headphones.
Okay.
I was victim to a distraction theft today. Do you want to see how you would have done?
Yeah.
So I was coming back from the gym.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been me. I'd have been immediately safe. I was in the house. Thinking about going for a run, I thought about it today.
Yeah, I've been 3 times. The gym doesn't make me feel any better, but swimming does.
Okay.
And I haven't been swimming since pre-pandemic, so I thought I'd do that. So I've been swimming three times. Anyway, my way back, and a man dressed in elaborate robes with one of those hats, which is like sort of a cylinder flat hat.
Yeah. Trustworthy hat. Someone in robes and a flat hat is such trustworthy.
He said, "Excuse me, I've got no knees. Can you help me move my bike?" And it was from one of those like basement porches on one of the terraced houses.
Are you sure you were coming back from the gym, not back from some drug-fueled... I've got no knees. Well, can you help me move my bike? How are you going to plan to fucking ride that bike with no knees, mate?
Well, we're now covering a lot of my subsequent thinking about the whole event. So he says, "I've got no knees. Can you help me move my bike up?" And if someone opens with, "I've got no knees," you don't go, "Fuck off, have you? You got a couple of knees knocking around." You sort of immediately go, "I'm so sorry." You go sort of super polite and helpful. So I said, "Of course I can help you move your bike." He was then super specific about where I hold it. Okay. He was like, "You have to hold it at the bottom of the stem because you'll need the height to get it up the stairs, and hold it on the left handlebar." So I went down and I then just went to pick it up as I would pick up a bike. He went, "No, left handlebar and hold it on the stem." So I then held it on one of the bits of the stem. He went, "No, other stem, and then no lower." So every time I'm about to look up, he's giving me another instruction.
Yeah.
So anyway, I lift it up and I give it to him, and I put my stuff, I put my coffee, my headphones and my gym bag on the pavement. Yeah. But on the way down, I'd been thinking, if this is a trick, you've got your phone and you've got your keys. Because I have a system whereby I've got four pockets and I carry four things and I call them the power four. This is why I've never lost a phone, I've never lost my wallet, I've never lost my keys and I've never lost my electronic cigarette. That's the power four.
Seems like you need a fifth pocket, John.
Well, here's the thing. When you introduce a fifth item, headphones, you have to update it. It has to become the power five.
Yeah.
But because I'd gone to the gym, I'd left my wallet at home and put just the gym card in my gym bag. So the power four was now, I don't know, disbanded and had a fourth element. I couldn't just check on my pockets and go, "I've got all my stuff." So anyway, I then moved off and a guy got out of a car next to him and they were chatting. And the guy was like 20 with a couple of knees. So I was like, why didn't he just get the guy in the car to help him with the bike? And then I went in the door, because I live about two doors down from him in Edinburgh, and he said, "Oh, do you live here?" And I went, "Oh, just for the festival." And then they disappeared. But the bike didn't... He was carrying the bike because he didn't have the key for the lock.
Right.
And I thought, that is something super dodgy, but I've got my stuff. And then I noticed I didn't have my headphones. However, I had put my headphones in a special secret place that so secret even I didn't know where they were. So I didn't lose my headphones, so I won. But it was an attempted distraction theft. But
and what they might have stolen, you might have helped them steal a bike by the sounds of it.
Shit, my fingerprints are now on that bike. Oh. Yeah, my fingerprints are now on that bike in a very specific place.
Like in every single part of the bike. Well, no, hold it there, hold it there, hold it there.
Oh.
And that bike's probably going to be used in a terrible murder, and this is your last... it's a great alibi for a murder. If you have committed a murder on a bike, this is a great alibi you've come up with. We're looking for a man in a little hat.
To hold the left handle and the bottom of the stem.
Yeah.
I've been double scammed. Oh, my God. Well, at least maybe, because I tweeted about it and we've spoken about it now on record.
Yeah.
So will that be an alibi?
No, that makes it seem more like you've set this whole thing up, knowing I would talk about it.
What is wrong with the world? Just stay at home and don't bother. The next time you bring me on will be in 25 years' time and you'll say, "As seen in Belmarsh."
But imagine the shows you could put on. And if you, it would be quite good to go to prison, wouldn't it?
For
25 years.
No, Richard,
for a
awful
crime you didn't commit, so you're not even guilty, you're just in prison, and then you've got all that time to think about your stand-up. I bet they're crying out for people to do shows in Belmarsh.
Yeah, I think it's the sort of 25 years in prison you're skipping over, which would be the downer.
And then you come out of prison and you've finally been proven that what you said on the podcast was true and that you didn't steal the bike. And then you could do an award-winning show.
Like a sort of very, very bad version of the Shawshank Redemption.
Well, I'm sorry you were victim to what wasn't actually a crime.
No.
Well, unless you were perpetuated the crime, I don't know. Good. How's your Edinburgh going so far?
Yeah, good. It's fascinating. I think it's a fascinating year. I think it's quite a difficult year out there. I think cost of living is hitting comedians and their audiences and the staff in venues very hard. I'm just doing a work in progress show up here, but it's my 12th or 13th full year. So I sort of feel bizarrely like something of a veteran, which is weird. I think there's a lot wrong with the way the festival is being run and the way that I think the accommodation is meaning this is becoming a festival for people who've got money behind them or who have got a lot of profile behind them, and I think that's a real shame. I think it's becoming too expensive for people to come and visit. Yeah. But I think there are a few factors in that might change, because I think they changed the letting laws in Scotland, but also on top of that, COVID, so landlords were unsure as to whether it might go ahead, so they held back, which pushed the prices up originally, because there weren't many... sorry, this is quite boring technical stuff, but because there weren't many properties, people...
There's a lot of people from Edinburgh here who want to know how much they can rent their properties for next year.
Well, £2,000 a room, basically, and it's absolutely disgusting, but there's nothing you can do about it. Unless the letting agencies agree to sign up to some kind of agreement where there's a maximum price per room, wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah.
And have a big sort of stamp on their website saying we agree to a fair sort of equitable rent. But I know people who, brilliant comedians, who just can't afford, who haven't come up. Because, you know, if you've got a few hundred quid in your bank account and they say a two-bedroom flat is £4,000, a three-bedroom flat is £5,000, no chance. Well, I mean, what do you do? You can't just magic it from anywhere.
Yeah, I know. I think it's a big concern, and you know, and for people coming up, so it means there isn't as much of an audience, I would say, this year. And part, you know, with everything else that's going on, so like people have left it late to book their tickets reasonably in case things get cancelled or in case they get ill.
And I think that's speaking to people who promote shows across different arts, from sort of theatre and musicals and stuff. That's a habit now, that people are used to things being rescheduled, so they wait until it's pretty much definitely going ahead before booking. Cost of everything else has gone up, so food, I paid £3.15 for ketchup in a Tesco. £3.15.
How big a bottle though?
Oh, it was hefty.
Okay.
But I don't know. I think,
did you get through a lot of ketchup, John?
Well, enough to warrant one bottle of ketchup a month.
For the month, okay.
I would say.
How old now are you? 39?
40.
40.
Oh, fuck, I'm 40.
Oh, dear.
I remember the first year, one of the first years I was in Edinburgh, you doing, oh fuck, I'm 40.
That was probably about 15 years ago, I'm guessing.
Yeah. And I remember thinking, imagine being 40. Imagine it. I'll never ever be. If I'm still doing Edinburgh when I'm 40, then you did, oh fuck, I'm 50, and I'm now 40.
Yeah,
so that, and just time.
And that one was so quick, and I'm halfway to 60. You know,
no.
If I make it, yeah, I'm 55 now, so halfway to 60.
Jeez Louise. It goes.
And, you know, I wish I was fucking 40 now, I tell you.
I wish I was 25 looking at you going, I'll never be 40. But you do get a bit of perspective, I think. That's one thing. That can be a bad thing as well, because we were talking backstage about, you know, once you've been up here for multiple years, there are quite a few ghosts that haunt the streets.
Yeah.
And it can be quite a sort of stressful experience.
As I say, this year is a calm ride, apart from I've got to look after my kids, but I'm enjoying that mainly. It's just that it's another thing to worry about them, you know.
Mm.
But it's fun having them here. But yeah, it's just, I think, like all the fringes I've done, and you start thinking about, and so many bad things have happened up here. So if you start getting to a negative point of view, then, yeah. you know, and you forget about all the many fantastic things that have happened here as well. It just sort of starts to weigh down on you a bit as you think about the
It's hard to find a street that doesn't remind you of something you've done wrong.
Yeah.
So that would be trying to find new routes to my venue so I don't walk past the place I cried or the place a girl kissed me and never called me back or the place I made an idiot of myself in front of some important person.
Yeah.
And that there aren't any. There isn't a bar or a street or a doorway where, in this city where I haven't fucked up. And you forget about the stuff that was good.
Yeah, and it's over so many years. I think you were saying, it's a bit like when you go back to your college town or your school and you're reminded of things that happened there, but it's over so many years in there. I mean, it might be the same amount of time, actually, in terms of time lived here, but it's so many years, so there's so many different kinds of fuck-ups.
And you've been here single, you've been here in relationships, you've been here when it's affected your relationship negatively, you've been here when it started a relationship, so there's all these, and that's why this city means so much to me, because it's such a part of so many different elements of my life. It's not just the show you do for an hour, it's the socializing, it's the people you meet. And, you know, one of the huge pleasures of my life has been the comedians and people who work in comedy that I've met and feel really honored to know. But there's a lot of people are pissed off and people who pissed me off. So it's sort of coming back to an ongoing relationship that you leave for a year and then you sort of pick up a few of the strands and you're reminded of regrets and... God.
And there's a few
so
people,
come and see the show.
There's a few people I don't want to bump into as well, right?
And
I've not really had that so much before, but there's a few people that there's beefs one way or another with, and you know, you can bump into anyone at any corner.
I'm sort of beefless now. To an extent, I'm beefless.
Yeah.
And I haven't made any beefs for a long time. But I think, like, I get so enthusiastic about meeting people and going out for a drink that people... I set up a WhatsApp group for sort of meeting up for drinks. And I was too enthusiastic when I set up the WhatsApp group. No one's replied to any of my requests. They start to organise things like going for walks. And I'm like, come on, who's going out on the lash? And it's just, all right, John, chill out.
Well, that's all, you know, but see, that's all over. I don't drink anymore, but also...
Do you not drink at all?
No, I've given up drinking and...
Oh, man.
And I don't really go out anymore. And certainly in Edinburgh, there's no... My wife's got an evening show, so I've got to look after the kids.
I'm in awe of... I know a few people who've stopped drinking totally.
Yeah.
And I'm envious, and I am incredibly pleased for them. And I just... I doff my cap to you, because I just can't switch off my brain otherwise.
Yeah. I don't think I could have done when I was your age, though. So but I've been trying to give up drinking, like, for a long time. And I do it for a little bit, and then, you know, and I might start again, but it's been, it's been a year and a half, more than a year and a half, yeah, 20.
Amazing.
But I didn't really give up, I just stopped drinking, and then it's just not started again.
Mm.
And now it sort of feels like, oh, it'd have to be something quite... There's been a couple of days in Edinburgh, I thought, yeah, I just would quite like to go... I've given up eating chocolate, but yesterday I ate a whole bag of my children's giant chocolate buttons, because I was just sitting in the house on my own feeling a bit like, oh, God, it's so tired. So yeah, that could happen with. I don't know. Do you think that's worse or better? Do you think it would be better for me to go and drink a big bottle of whiskey or a giant bag of chocolate buttons? Because once I start eating chocolate, I'm fucked.
I think buttons. I think you've got to be kind to yourself.
Yeah. Okay.
You what's the kind? So that I have that with drinking sometimes. It'd be like, look, either you drink and you hate yourself for doing it, or you drink and accept that you're going to do it. What's the least stressful of those options? I mean, the least stressful is not drinking. But, you know, you've got to be kind and respectful of yourself. And it's, I guess, finding a balance. I'm all about the weather in my brain at the minute.
Okay.
I started using a meditation app, which can turn my brain off about 10 minutes. Then we hit the pubs.
Yeah.
But, like, I see my mental state as, like, weather. So in the same way I might think, oh, it's pissing down today, I don't then get stressed about why is it raining? What have you done? How do you stop it raining? You must be an awful person if it's raining outside. I just think, okay, you've just got to get in your tent or put your umbrella up and get through this. And maybe tomorrow it'll be a bit brighter. And
yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Expressing your love can look many different ways. And with the right jewelry gift from Blue Nile, it can truly sparkle. Blue Nile's collection of classic diamond jewelry makes for the kind of gift that speaks volumes without saying a single word. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, Blue Nile's diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I think that's the thing I think about Edinburgh, is there's a lot of comedians here, and the comedians think a lot about stuff and a bit too much about stuff. And there's a lot of mental illness. I mean, there's a lot of mental illness that now people are talking about, which they wouldn't have talked about. And you talk very, very brilliantly about mental health issues on your podcast and your radio show. But it's sort of the worst possible people you could put. I'm in a quite a happy mental state, and I still just feel that pressure of the fringe. It's sort of just a weird...
Yeah, I think you have to sort of be... You have to remember it's just... You know, it's an hour's work a day.
Yeah,
it's hard, man.
People over the past couple of years, especially.
This is the work as well. Just sitting on this chair talking. Yeah,
no, okay. You know, there is other stuff. There's prep, and if you're flyering for your own show, and if you're trying to promote it yourself, it can be very stressful and very draining. But there's an awful lot of stuff that's in your control. Like, do you stay out till 4 a.m. getting wasted every night? Of course the next day you're going to feel terrible. Like, there is stuff you can control and stuff you can't. And I think for me, Edinburgh, as in life, is about separating what you can control and what you can't, as the Serenity Prayer tells us. So, and that's the kind of way you get through stuff. It's like, well, if I'm in charge of all the stuff I'm in charge of, how hard do I work on my show? How I behave towards people? How... You know, what effort do I put in? How do I look after myself? Am I eating healthily? Blah, blah, blah. All that stuff I can control. I can't control, you know, how many people turn up or whether they like it. I can control whether I like it.
Yeah.
You know, so, but you don't feel that when you're young. You just think, well, you know, why do nice girls hate me? That's basically what's going through your head.
Well, and, but, you know, the financial pressure of it all, you know, even like in 2015, I lost £45,000 putting on a play. And that was, you know, it was just, and my stand-up show didn't do as well as usual. So I kind of thought, I'll make a bit of money on the stand-up show and that'll cover some of the costs.
But you were in charge of the decision to bring up a new play about Rasputin.
I was.
But you know, you weren't in.
I thought some people would come and see it, though. I wasn't in charge of that.
No, but, and this is speaking with hindsight, but new plays tend to start off in like 20 or 30 seaters and get a lot of buzz. How many seats were there for your play?
I mean, it was like 300 or 400, yeah. It was a big room. I wasn't expecting, but it was only because I had a deal to do both shows at the same theatre, but it meant my stand-up show was much later than usual.
Mm.
So the play was in the afternoon and the stand-up show was later. And I think even by that stage, my audience were a little bit older and not wanting to stay up till 11:05 or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that is late. I've noticed there are less late shows this year. Yeah. There are less shows in general, which there was it Nika Burns mentioned in her speech that the fringe is shrinking a bit, which might be a good thing. But I would just temper that by saying, if those shows are the people who can't afford to come up, that's not a good thing.
No.
Because it means we're shrinking to a sort of middle-class funded festival, which almost becomes curated in a sense. And the great thing about this festival is it's not curated, but it becomes curated by degrees if you need to have financial backing or money behind you or whatever, support from your parents or a well-paying job outside of comedy.
Yeah.
I think the ticket prices are too cheap. And it's a difficult thing to say because I know comedians are very conscious of ticket price, but everything else has gone up by 300% since I came here. Tickets have gone up, I worked out, by about 10% or got cheaper.
Yeah.
So if the beer outside your venue is twice the price as it was, if the accommodation is four times the price it was, if a music concert is three times the price it was, but a comedian is charging the same, that's not sustainable. And I think there need to be more. There's a good model at a venue called the Monkey Barrel where they keep, I think, 15% of tickets to pay what you want on the day, regardless of the show.
Yeah.
And that's good, but only if people are charging the sort of something approaching the market value for an hour's entertainment. It's very tricky to talk about, but, you know, everyone's got to get paid. The venue staff have got to get paid. The bar staff, the techs, everyone involved in this incredible festival has got to get paid. And at the minute, they're not.
Yeah, that's true.
Because the council are charging the market rate for advertising. The university are charging market rate for the rooms. The bars are charging market rate for the bars. Everyone is charging the market rate, apart from comedians who are going, oh, I can't charge £7. Fuck, it's £7 for an hour of entertainment. But they feel they can't because they set the ticket price when the product doesn't exist. And if you're in charge of setting the ticket price for something that doesn't exist, you're going to want to make it as cheap as possible because you think it's going to be shit because it's not there. But no other artist sets their own price before the thing exists.
Yeah, it's true. But, you know, I think the thing that's bothering me about this year is that, you know, exactly the thing about the proper fringe comedians are going to find it difficult to come up, and the kind of audience that I was when I first came to the fringe, and, you know, admittedly slept on floors and did things very cheaply, but I could afford to go to shows, and I could afford to be here, and I could afford the train to get here. And if those people aren't coming, then I just fear that 10 years time the fringe is sort of just shifting, like the political scene we're in at the moment. It's just getting older and older, and then, you know, all the old people are dead, and then what's left?
Yeah, and that's what will happen, but I don't know how. Unless you get the ticket prices in line with the prices of everything else, I don't know how you stop that.
Yeah.
Because what a tickets for Edinburgh show is going to be £10 in another 10 years' time, when accommodation is £5,000 a room and beer is £10 a pint, and techs are still getting paid, I don't know, £7, £8, £9 an hour. It's not fair.
Yeah.
Everyone's got to get paid.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just people who can afford not to get paid who come. And that's not good.
It's true. But it has always operated, you know, the Fringe has always operated on the acts, like, investing in their future and people taking advantage of that, I think. In that, we used to lose a couple of grand in the 1990s when we'd come up and you go, well, that's okay because hopefully we'll get a job or two that will start paying that back and it will lead to something else. And there was a chance of it leading to something else, which I don't think there is now.
I don't think there is now for as many people. But I worry that there, you know, it's back of a fag packet maths. It's not rocket science. If you're doing 80 seats and you sell 50 of them for £10 a ticket, that's £500 somewhere.
Yeah.
So £500 has gone into the system. And the fact that that money is not going in part to the person who created the show, the person who took the tickets on the door, the person who serves the beer, the person who designed the post, whatever it is, that you have to find a way to distribute that money. And it doesn't feel very socialist to say the way to do that is to charge more, but the way is to charge more because then you can distribute that wealth.
Yeah.
And if that wealth is going into a landlord or someone's back pocket for their flat, it's done. This will not survive in the way that it has brilliantly survived for so many years, because it becomes a festival for rich people, and it becomes a festival for rich acts and people who can afford £200 on a train, £250 a night in a hotel, you know, £7 a pint. I'm lucky in that I've got a fan base, so I can be one of those people.
Yeah,
but I just don't know. I don't think there's as much exciting stuff happening as perhaps there was, because you can't take that risk. That's not to say there isn't exciting stuff. I've seen some brilliant stuff. I've heard about some brilliant stuff that I'm going to see, but it's there's a lot of people with playing it safe because they have to.
Yeah. No, it doesn't feel like a fringe anymore. But then, you know, you're over 40. I'm over 50.
I'm not over 40. I am 40.
Once you're 40, you're over 40.
Well, it's my 41st year.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's your 56th year.
Yeah. Let's move on to something happier. So, last time you were here, you were in a relationship and engaged to someone, and now. And now you're not. What happened? What went wrong?
I'm not an easy guy to be around. I'm not. I don't know. Life happens, I guess.
Oh man, it does. Look, you know. But again, like it's exactly the same point in my life. I was going through similar sort of stuff, and I think it is. It does feel difficult, but it sort of sorts itself out. You think so much about stuff, and you know your work you're doing about. With LSD, how do you cope? Which of you is you know you're thinking so much about these things and about your happiness and how to navigate life. And I think you know you're pretty wise about it all, but it just does take you know a lot of time. Then something clicks in, hopefully, and it works out.
Yeah, or it doesn't. It's the other.
Or
option.
It works for a bit and then it doesn't work
the
anymore.
The other option is you're sort of you know quite wise and emotionally literate and you know. Pleasant and alone because you're a nightmare because you obsess about stuff and you get trapped in your head and you drink a bit too much and you're not joyous, you're sort of withdrawn.
I think that's you though, isn't it? That's not me. It's ain't you, but it's you're talking about yourself.
But also like you gotta you've got to focus on the process and not the outcome, says the man who's had 10 unsuccessful relationships or whatever.
On the plus side, did your last partner do a show about you on the Edinburgh Fringe?
No.
So there you go.
No.
So you're moving in the right direction.
Moving in the right direction. But, it's difficult. I think I'm going to have to be more... not that I'm particularly... I'm going to have to be more careful about what elements of my private life I talk about on the radio.
Yeah.
Because you don't think about it in the moment when I'm chatting to Ellis. We're like, oh, I did this thing with my girlfriend this week. We had this funny incident. You think it's a funny thing. But then if that ends and you have to address eventually why you're no longer telling funny anecdotes about stuff you did with your girlfriend, then it's like Robbins announced the breakup of his, and you're like, well, I didn't. I just sort of said to Ellis that my relationship had ended. And so you then go, well, I don't want to have to feel like it's a press release. And then there's a fucking thing in the Daily Mail. And I never want to be that guy who's like in the Daily Mail, because I don't do that stuff. I don't do like, not that Amy has ever asked me, but John invited us to his tiny one-bedroom house and showed us his delightful display of Queen memorabilia. You know, I get it that if you use the publicity system when times are good, you have to accept that when times are bad, it sort of, you can't turn the tap off.
Yeah.
But I've never really turned the tap on, so it's quite scary even to get like a minor little tiny thing saying, oh, John Robbins has broken up with whatever in a newspaper website. So you have to then keep it back. But then it's like, well, what do I talk about now if I'm keeping all the stuff secret? Because I got to talk on the radio and on podcasts and stuff. But so something I'm going to have to think about.
It is worth thinking about, but I think it is, you know, I think you kind of have to not worry about that. There's people's jobs who is to listen to podcasts and then write down the stuff that's said in the podcast. And it's sort of, hello to those people. Have a little look at your life. I mean, at least you're a journalist. Go and, like, find something out on your own. Don't just wait for, and then a lot of it's just stuff that's been said, you know, like in my podcast, the things that become newsworthy are often things that have, or you know, I've read in a paper somewhere else. That's why I'm asking about them. So it's just this endless cycle of people creating news stories out of nothing. And I think it would be a shame, you know, it's lovely that you and I listen to your Five Live show when I'm in the car on a Friday afternoon, which is quite often. And, you know, your relationship's lovely and it's nice that you're so open. And I think, again, with with how do you cope? I think it's if you weren't talking, if you close off your own personal thoughts and your own personal life, then that's going to lose a little bit of something.
Right? Yeah, and I think the benefits of being open and not really thinking about the consequences of some of the stuff you share vastly outweigh the negative things. And in terms of the response that audiences have, especially throughout lockdown, the amount of people who, you know, come up to me and say, and a lot of people will hear this, a lot of artists or musicians, whatever, but you got us me through lockdown,
yeah,
is such an incredible, I can't really engage with it because it's too nice a thing. And it doesn't feel like that because you're doing everything at such a distance. You're just thinking, churning out like content and just talking and recording and editing and releasing. Not that I do any of the editing. Thank God. But, yeah, so I think we do have to do that because that's something that I think people like about us.
Yeah, and I think it's so important. You know, you've done on this podcast, you've obviously done it in your own stuff so much, that I think by talking about these things, it just lightens the load for anyone else going through anything similar. Because the inclination is to not, you know, I've been in relationships and they've gone wrong, and you just try not to talk about it for a bit until someone goes, hold on, are you not?
Yeah.
I haven't seen you with your partner for 3 years. Oh yeah, it's got to come out at some point.
Mm.
So, you know, I think that what you've always been great about is both you and Ellis together about just talking about these things. And as, you know, neither of you would be macho, you know, impenetrable men, but you are also kind of regular guys who I think it does appeal to an audience to go, oh, if they can talk about it, we can talk about it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're always careful not to tell someone else's story. I think that's quite a good rule for, like, stand-up or broadcasting or whatever, is don't tell a story that's not yours to tell. But, well, we just learned so much from the guests we had on How Do You Cope about lots of different mental health issues and struggles, stuff that I wouldn't have been on my radar. And then stuff that is so on your radar that it becomes too difficult to talk about. And there's been a couple of podcasts where I've had to really, like, practice the questions so I don't cry or well up or choke up during the interview. And the interview with Gail Porter and Richard Coles are examples of that, where there were bits. I actually had to get Ellis to read a quote from Richard's book because it just had me in bits. And there's a bit in Gail Porter's documentary about, it's about lots of things, but it's about loneliness, this bit that got to me. So we had to sort of have a couple of run-ups at that. So I learned a lot about, I've learned a lot about how to cope from our guests and the reading that we do around the topic. So I'm very proud of that. And I think, you know, you've got to keep doing what you're good at. I'm not good at most, like, I'm not a topical comedian. I'm not decent.
You were good about that bloke stealing your headphones. That was very topical. But like, that's the most topical thing you've ever
Yeah, but it's, you know, that you have to sort of pick what, I'm good at talking about myself and the things that happened to me. Yeah. And that's quite an easy topic to be an expert on.
It is.
It's just how you describe it.
Because I was lonely all through my 20s, really all through my 20s and a lot of my 30s before I kind of slightly pulled myself together. But I think that's part of the problem with Edinburgh. I still have that fear. I can still remember that fear of walking into the Pleasance Courtyard and not know, you know, knowing that some people might slightly know who you were, but also not knowing if there was going to be someone you knew there, not wanting to be seen on your own, but also that terrible fear of, you know, not of just sitting drinking on your own. And so I would just go. It's sort of weird now, like Friday, Saturday night, I'm in my flat looking after the kids and I'm happy. But, you know, 20 years ago, I'd have been in my flat on my own being very unhappy.
Oh, I still get nervous if I go to a... Because a lot of venues will have like an artist bar.
Yeah.
I don't go to that often because we're in the greatest pub city on earth. So why would you go to a kind of a shack for people who've taken a lot of cocaine when you can go to one of the great pubs? However, I do go to them. I still get nervous when I go to the door because I think they're going to say, I'm sorry, you can't come in here. Yeah. And then I get in there and there's no one I know in there. So I sit on my own and think, this has gone badly wrong. You're now sitting on your own in a bar drinking a cider, and it's not even a nice bar. You could be in a nice pub now. You could be in Vinny's or the Bennett's Bar or the Dagda or, you know, the any number of Waverley or Barony. Oh my God, this place. I would live here in a heartbeat if it wouldn't cause enormous problems in my career.
But it's good to, I think it's good for people to hear that. And, you know, the kind of people who listen to podcasts and like podcasts are all sad losers. So it's good for them to, it's good for them to hear that
they're
someone
like
as successful
me.
As you.
The people are like me when I do gigs or when me and Ellis do gigs. It's like, as troubling as an image this may sound, it's like being watched by 100 of me or 1,000 of me or 50 of me. And that's quite weird, but it's also really nice. And it means that when people do come up to me, they're as nervous as I am. So as much as the conversation might be a car crash, at least, that's happened because we're both sort of very shy. So I like it. I'm in a very, very, very lucky position.
Good. Well, you know, and it's good. I think it's great. So carry on talking about it and, you know, just stop fucking up all your relationships. Or just choose someone appropriate. Do better, John. Do better.
But then I think, well, maybe, you know, maybe some people aren't meant to.
Some people I meant to, but also, look, I met my wife when I was 40 and I'd basically fucked up every relationship for 20 years, you know, and it was, you know, and it could easily have carried on for a lot longer if I hadn't met my wife or it could, you know, so it's...
But is being in a relationship until you die, is that success?
Yes.
What... Why? You know, like, obviously that's a nice goal to have, but it's a bit like, you know, not every... I just... Maybe some people aren't cut out for it. Maybe, like... Daniel Kitson once had a line. He said, if you're in a relationship, in a loving relationship, best case scenario, two outcomes. One of you leaves or dies. That's how a relationship ends. Either in death or someone leaving you.
Yeah.
Or you leaving them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like I'm lacking the experience of relationships. I'm fucking got it coming out of my ears, you know, romance and sex and excitement and holidays and adventures and nights in. It's not like I missed out on any of that. It's just the person keeps changing. So it's not like I'm lacking the experience of a relationship.
No.
And I've nailed it.
Maybe it's
you losers who've been together 40 years trapped with the same old conversations about nothing in the same room without the frisson of a catastrophic breakup every 3 years.
But, you know, I'm not sure we were... I mean, there's no meant anyway about anything, but I'm not... People didn't used to live as long as we live, so even if you were in a relationship...
100%.
It would last 10 years because one of you would be dead in 10 years. So I don't think there's absolutely nothing wrong with... I think a lot of people in relationships would think, that's what John's describing sounds quite good. Maybe I should move over to that. But, yeah, it's a pain, isn't it, finding the next one. It's good when you just get one that's okay. Just go, oh, thank God. That's where I'm at. I love my wife very dearly. Oh God, she doesn't enjoy jokes. She doesn't enjoy my jokes. She doesn't enjoy my jokes. You're absolutely right. And good luck. I hope you do whatever you want to do. I don't care. I just worry about you, John. I hope you're okay. That's all right. Why haven't you been on Taskmaster yet? You play golf with the bloke from it? What's going on? The thing is, I asked this question and they're already filming like two or three series ahead and I don't know who's in it. And so often, like, Dara O'Brien was like the week before the announcement was on the podcast going, yeah, I live just down the road from the house and what's going on? I've never been asked on and he already filmed this whole thing, so...
No, I've not filmed or been asked to be on Taskmaster. I was close 1 year, apparently, but I don't know. You got to pick your battles. I don't get asked to do a lot of telly stuff, but I can either let that get to me and stress me out and make me feel bad about myself, or I can think, John, you got a radio show, you've got podcasts that people really like, you sell really well when you do stand-up, people like your stand-up, you've got a YouTube golf channel with someone who really should be part of the decision-making process of Taskmaster. But it's like, why is suddenly... There's always going to be something you can use to fucking get pissed off about. Am I going to define my life by whether I'm on Taskmaster? No.
You should define it whether you've been on it and whether you've won your series and then won the Champion of Champions. That's how you've got to define yourself. And then the Champion of Champion of Champions. That's how I'm going to define myself.
But how did you get on Taskmaster then?
How did I get on it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of went on about it a lot until they put me on.
And did your agent help with that at all?
I guess, maybe.
Yeah, so we are in a slightly different comedic infrastructure, one that you can exert a little bit more influence over, and I'm glad you did, because I think you were fantastic on it.
I don't get onto many of those things, so, you know, I think it is...
But I'm not going to suddenly start defining my success by whether I'm on one programme, because if you get on that one, then there'll be another one. And you'd be like, oh, God, now I feel terrible about myself again because everyone's asking me. I mean, the one thing I would ask, if people could stop messaging me to ask me why I'm not on Taskmaster, and every time Taskmaster announced a lineup, as much as I appreciate being in people's thoughts, not atting me into the tweet going, why no John Robbins and LSJ? I mean, just is if it's up to me, I'd have put myself in season one. I'd have also been the host. It's not up to me. I am very thankful for the things I do.
There must be some comfort in the fact that Ellis hasn't done it either. So when
there
Ellis
will
gets
come
it,
a day, and I suspect that day is not far away, when Ellis will be asked to do Taskmaster,
yeah,
and I will burst into flames.
You got a very nice...
He got asked to do Pointless?
Yeah.
Comedian Double Act episode of Pointless. Comedian Double Act,
yeah.
Ellis and Ivo Graham. As a man he has never appeared with on anything. And it wasn't like they wanted to have a diverse lineup, which I could imagine. Two fucking white guys. That I was livid about because it made no sense. Ellis and I have since filmed Pointless together.
Okay, good.
Which kind of is like... It's not like it was... I love Ivo. He's a personal friend. I think he's one of the best comedians in the country. But it's not like it was Ellis and Eddie Izzard. It's like we're all the same gang. It's Ellis and John is the name. How thick are you? Or, could be the case, who have I pissed off? Because I might have pissed off someone involved with the booking process at some point.
Yeah.
But I don't think I have, because I think I'm quite a nice person.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
I mean, I think comedians all get into this. I certainly get into that. I think, you know, what did I do? What did I? It took me so long to get onto anything else on TV. And, you know, and apart from that, I did have a show, but then that finished. And did I do something really wrong? And, you know, so you do start thinking those things. I think it's just that there's so many people that could be, and the people making the decisions aren't always the smartest people in the world.
But it's not to say they've made they're wrong. It's just, I've never felt, you know, I've done TV and I will do more TV. And I quite like the TV, some of the TV I've done, and other bits I've not liked as much. But it's just one of the... That was the most awkward water pouring I've ever seen.
Thought I'd do something visual for the crowd.
But, you know, it's never been like a done deal between me and TV. It's never been an easy process. There's always been sort of, it's that you have to make a case for it. With other people, that journey is slightly easier. But I've got, you know, I enjoy what I do and I think I'm good at what I do. So I don't need to like suddenly think if I'm not doing everything, I'm bad or I've failed or, you know, I've got past that concern.
Are you sure?
Do you know, I am. I really am. How?
I mean, you and Ellis together are really great. You have to do, and you've been working together for a long time, and you have to do a lot of talking together, and it always seems to flow. I listened to the Five live show on the way up to Edinburgh, and then I was on it last week, which is a weird experience. I think, that show I was enjoying and now on. But it's sort of effortless it feels effortless in terms of the relationship.
The effort comes from the producers and the editors and the, you know, people who prepare the stuff. And yeah, by now, if me and Ellis were having to sit down and script shows, you'd think, I don't think you're very good at this, because we just know each other so well. We know, you know, we still make each other laugh. Like last night, we had to pre-record next Friday's show, and you know, I was in my bedroom with sort of duvets everywhere to deaden the sound. He was in his living room in London. Dave was on a balcony in Portugal because he's on holiday doing it remotely. And I got a kick out of making him laugh and out of making Dave laugh and about saying stuff that was perhaps a step too far, pretending that I'm like being silenced by the BBC and that I all of those things and all of the rolling jokes and all of the openness and the sort of feeling like this far from just screaming about my life but saying it in a way that will make them laugh and vice versa. Like Ellis goes on a holiday to Bedford and he's lame and he doesn't go out anymore, but I love him and he's doing really, he's got loads of other projects on, and we just like making each other laugh, and I get a kick out of making them laugh, and it's like an adrenaline rush. And I know just before I say something, this is really going to make him laugh. And I think he has the same with me.
Yeah.
We have the same with Dave. So it can't get stale, because if he stops laughing, then that's when it's a problem.
I think impressive about it is it's an easy show to slot into as well. Like sometimes when you come in as a guest or something, it's quite hard to get into the vibe or be invited into the vibe, I suppose. Mm. Whereas I found it a very easy show to just like get into and just do my stuff and be supported. And
yeah, there's not too many in jokes, but we do have like lots of long running sort of themes. So if you go right back to the start of the then XFM podcasts, so we must have done 700 or 800 now. You know, there's stuff for people to really get lost in or to sort of feast on or wear on a t-shirt. But also, it has to remain a radio show that you can turn on if you've never heard us before and think, what is this garbage? Or, oh, that's funny. You don't usually hear people talking about that on Five Live on a Friday afternoon between the football and the drive program or whatever. So I like that. But, you know, you finish the show and you go home and stare at the wall.
And do you think
that's what keeps it fresh?
Do you think it'll go on forever? Can you envisage a time when you and Ellis hate each other and don't talk to each other anymore, like all real double X?
No, because what was the last thing?
Like all real double X.
No, we've come through some big tests. My moods when I found out what he was getting paid for fantasy football. We've come through some really big tests. Okay. And we've got through them because we love each other and we say we love each other on air, and sometimes we are joking and sometimes we're not. So I can't ever see. I mean, like, we might get bored.
Yeah.
He might get too wealthy. He might be on Taskmaster, or I might just retire and play golf because I get sort of sick of myself. But I can't ever see it ending for a negative reason.
No. Good. It feels like two proper friends, which I assume it is.
And we are a hundred million billion.
And also the producer's fantastic. Dave's the producer.
Dave's great, and Matt and Bertie and past producers Jess and Vin. They work so hard in a way I could never.
You've got a book coming out of the How'd You Cope?
That's TBC. Yes, but then my personal circumstances took a downturn when I was meant to start writing that book, and I felt I couldn't face it. So that's sort of on hold, but hopefully will happen.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't write about so many different types of mental health problem while I was struggling, but in a better place now, so maybe.
Sure. Good. And what's the work in progress that you're doing? Is that working towards a new tour?
Yeah, so the tour will be next autumn 2023, and I'll come back to Edinburgh to do a better version of this with more new bits next year. Tickets will be £1,000.
Yeah, think of £1,000.
I will be the one, to the pioneer of the £1,000 ticket to recalibrate the economy of the Edinburgh Festival. I'll come up next August and I'll tour it after that. And I'm really excited because 2019 was my last tour.
Yeah.
And a lot's happened since then, but it'll be about similar subjects, but in a, you know, I think it might be called Howl.
Okay.
Quite like that title. Yeah, that'll go on sale quite soon, hopefully, when they sort out the dates.
Cool. All right. Well, everyone will look out for that. I'd like to give you a copy of my book.
Yeah.
That even though I went through a bad year, I managed to write a book. It's called Can I Have My Ball Back? It's just, that's for you. It's a pre, look at that, it's not even got a back cover or anything.
So which is more valuable, the pre-book or the mug people are already tweeting me about?
I mean, people are already trying to buy your mug off you. I think that's probably, there's only a very few of those. There was one given away in a competition.
Yeah.
And I've given one to Bob Mortimer.
Oh, thank you.
And I've given one to you.
It's the very small text.
Yeah. I don't know, if I think that's how it's going to be. I didn't make that choice. Yeah, I can't see it from here. Yeah, maybe it's going to be bigger than that. I mean, if I want any... I suppose, you know, most people who get testicular cancer are young, though, so, you know, they've got very strong eyes.
Yeah.
So they can read all
the text. But also, what I like about it is usually people make the text big, so they have to write less. Whereas you've...
There was a lot to go. You know, but I actually found writing the book more traumatic than having testicular cancer.
Yeah.
Because it sort of brought it all, but you know, I had to think about it a lot, and I think this year has sort of been harder than last year as a result. So I have to write a book about writing the book.
Ah.
To let people know how difficult it is to actually.
Can I have my ball back? Back.
Yeah. Can I have my ball back? Back. Back. Yeah. No. Yeah. Good. So let me know what you think. Bob Mortimer's given me a quote. It's not on there yet because it was, you know, he's a nice guy. You can give me a quote. You know.
And then the amount of people I give quotes to, and then you get the book and you're like, didn't make the grade.
Someone else decides, that's the thing. Okay. I got loads for, I think the original Emergency Questions book, which is here, loads of people gave me quotes. And the guy said, yeah, get in touch with it. And I got in touch with loads of people. And I think you gave me a quote for that, didn't you? Maybe.
I think probably.
And it's nowhere to be seen. You were beaten by Dawn French, Richard Osman and Adam Kay. Fair enough.
Yeah, there you go. Big hitters. Big hitters.
Once you've asked loads of people to do that, you can't ask them again. I can't go back to Richard Osman and say, give me a quote about this. He said, what about when I said brilliant about your last book?
Fantastic.
I'm genuinely interested to see what you think about it, if you could be asked to read it. But, you know, no pressure. I've just given you a copy. I'm going to give one to Ed Gamble as well, so it's not that big a deal. He does feature it.
Does he?
But yeah, because it's about. I did Taskmaster.
So I've got to read a book about what it's like being on Taskmaster.
What it cost me to get on Taskmaster was one testicle, John. If you're prepared to pay that price, that's what Alex Horn needs. He uses them as golf balls.
Well, I tell you what, if he is, he's lost it. That's a joke for a golfer or anyone who watches our golf channel, Bad Golf, which is a pleasure.
Yeah.
If it was being on Taskmaster versus playing 20 rounds of golf with Alex a year, oh my God, golf, please. Okay. Such a joy. He's one of the nicest people you ever meet in your life. And also, I found out recently, he's never been sad. Can you imagine that?
He must have been sad.
He went on a podcast. What was it? And someone said to me, I listened to a podcast with Alex. You know, he's never been sad. And I was like, as insane as that sounds, I can kind of see that.
Yeah.
Very low stress guy. We're very different, Alex and I, but I love him dearly.
He's terrific. Well, look, we'll look forward to it. We can't get any more tickets to see you in Edinburgh. You're sold out in Edinburgh. But there'll be a tour. Howl?
Maybe. TBC, working title, work in progress.
Yeah.
And I'll be up next year as well, and hopefully...
If the Edinburgh Fringe survives...
Well, it always will. Yeah. It changes, but I just hope it doesn't change away from giving opportunities to as diverse a group of people as possible to create and to perform the incredible things that they do, because that would be a terrible shame. And also, from what I've heard from people who've seen lots of shows, the best work is being done by those people from diverse backgrounds, from members of the LGBTQ+ community, performers from ethnic minorities, women.
Fantastic.
Those are the best
shows.
By all different sorts of people, but we absolutely need to make sure this Fringe remains open to everyone and affordable to everyone, because it's the best thing in the world.
Good. Well, that's a fantastic note to end on. Give it up, ladies and gentlemen, the amazing John Robbins. Thank you very much. We're back tomorrow with Janine Garofalo. I mean, come on. What do you want? Come and see that. Thank you very much.
Listening to Rahulastapur from the Edinburgh Fringe with me, Richard Herring, and my fantastic guest, who I know you know who it was. I'm not going to tell you again. You're not stupid. Thank you to Scamp Regard for playing this music. I'm indebted to my technician and friend, Rhys Thomas. I'm also indebted to Chris Evans, not that one, and to all the fantastic crew at the ballroom, at the assembly rooms, and everyone at the assembly rooms in Edinburgh. What a fantastic lot of people you are. Thanks for all your help. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Thanks again for listening to the podcast. RichardHerring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs for all of the information on the tour. GoFasterStripe.com for lots of downloads and books and lots of fun. Thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your friends about the tour. I love you all. I'm out.